We bring you none of the hot take BS. We bring you bets. We bring you sports.
I don't care about bragging rights.
It just introduces more volatility into the equation.
I don't care about victory laps.
Stop it. Please stop it. Throw the football into the floor.
The BetQL Network presents your favorite handicapper's favorite handicapper, Ken Barkley.
If I have an opinion, I'm just going to go put money on that thing happening.
And your host, Nick Kostos.
Every single play of every single game impacts you in some way, shape, or form.
It's You Better You Bet, presented by BetMGM.
It is a phenomenal Football Friday. It is You Better You Bet. It's Nick Kostos, it's Ken Barkley, and it's you here with us on the BetQL Network, simulcast for the next 2 hours by our friends at Stadium, and it's going to be a badass 2 hours of wagertainment. We will continue to break down last night's round one of the 2024 NFL Draft and spin it forward into the regular season. Any win total bets that we like, win total thoughts that we have. We'll get into Offensive Rookie of the Year, where Caleb Williams is the favorite, and Defensive Rookie of the Year, where Latu is the favorite. Not as sexy a market, Defensive Rookie of the Year this year versus Offensive Rookie of the Year. So a lot more NFL coming up over the course of the program. Dave Wannstedt and Brian Baldinger will join us next hour to break down last night's round one of the NFL draft. We'll also get to the NBA with the Nuggets beating the Lakers for the 700th consecutive time. My Knicks, unfortunately, losing to the Philadelphia 76ers. Some hockey also. All our bets for tonight coming up in the final hour, the power hour of the show. But let's kick off the fun and frivolity on this phenomenal Football Friday, nine words that start with P, with our good buddy Alex Christensen, better known to you and yours, Noops, of FTN Bets and Bets US. He is on Twitter at _Noops, one of our favorites when it comes to breaking down the NBA. If you're looking for great NBA betting information, our guy Noops, one of the best in the business. And also, Noops is a big Sixers fan, so we are mortal enemies today. Noops, welcome back to the program. Nick and Ken, what's up?
It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood. Happy Friday. It's always nice to be back talking basketball with anybody, even a Knicks fan.
Zing. What are you doing with the rest of this series? We haven't talked about this game yet, Noops, like in great detail, because we did NFL draft the entire first hour of the show, really, but kind of a unique scheduling quirk, right? And you're like a Sixers fan, you're a Joel Embiid fan. Couldn't cook up a schedule that's any better for him rehabbing than multiple days between games 2 and 3, which was last night, and then multiple days between game 3 and game 4, which would be 2 days from now. It is an early start, I guess, for what it's worth, 1 p.m. Eastern time. Sixers 4.5. They trail 2-1 in the series. Anything on game 4? And what is your best guess for how this series plays out?
Yeah, nothing for game 4 yet. I'm still kind of waiting to see. You know, we're basically looking at pretty much the same line. Sixers are 4.5-point favorites. I guess that's down that close, closer to 5, 5.5. The total pretty much right in the same spot. And it's one of those things where, you know, Ken, I like that schedule for the short term. But in a series that I think is going to end up going 5, 6, 7 games, I'd honestly rather have the rest a little bit later on in between the travel spots, because it just all comes down to Joel Embiid and his ability to play himself into shape on a knee that is not 100%. He has really looked tired. Again, even last game as he was pushing through, you see him just kind of bent over, heaving at the chest. He is constantly thinking about that knee, and it's just, I think, a matter of time where you're going to get through this series, and even if the Sixers can somehow win, I think it really does limit what they do going forward. New York looks pretty solid, had a down game in game 3. I think they'll find a way to bounce back. I think the best thing for Philadelphia might be the return of De'Anthony Melton, though. He is someone that was really important to this team early on. He's been out with a back injury for about a month at this point. If he can come back and be solid here, I think that's a real advantage for Philadelphia to have a guard defender there on the roster, to have someone who's actually a pretty good rebounder on the roster for a team that struggled. So I'm not as optimistic as I was at the beginning of the series about the Sixers' chances. And if they can somehow find a way to get this done quickly, that's better. If we end up going to 7 games, it's going to be tough for Embiid to be healthy, and I think favors the Knicks.
Leave the fandom aside here and give us an objective answer. Is Joel Embiid a dirty player? Did he play dirty in game 3 on Thursday night against the New York Knicks?
He did have one particular play that I would have to describe as dirty, but I don't think that I could describe him in totality as
a dirty
should
player. Should he have been ejected from the game? Fandom aside, speaking objectively, for almost hurting Mitchell Robinson.
I plead the fifth.
You're not allowed to. This is not Hoops with Noops. Should he have been ejected from the game, yes or no?
I think you could make a case for it. I don't necessarily think so. I think it was just under the line, but I could see how certain people would see that. It was very close.
What a jerk.
Mitchell Robinson listed questionable for game four, by the way. And obviously saw a lot of Precious Achiuwa in the second half of that game against him. Not quite as good as someone who watched Mitchell Robinson get about 900 offensive rebounds in the first two games of the series. That is something Nick knows about. So, that sounded really smart, Noops, except, who is going to win the series and in how many games?
I think it's probably the Knicks in seven. Again, the Sixers are going to have to close it out in six, but I just don't feel confident that, again, Embiid can continue to play at a high rate for almost 40 minutes a night.
Any reason to believe, Noops, that the Lakers can get one off the Nuggets coming up in game four, which we talked about the Sixers-Knicks scheduling. LeBron James and company don't get a reprieve. They're back in action tomorrow night on Saturday night, game four. Nuggets up 3-0 in the series. Denver's a 3.5-point road favorite for what it's worth, and I looked this up. All the games were close last year in the Western Conference Final. In the closeout game at Staples, I know it's not called that anymore. I don't care. Denver won that game by two, LeBron missing like a layup at the buzzer at the end of the game. So 3.5, can the Lakers win? Would you ever bet the Lakers to cover in game four?
I would not. This is a nightmare matchup. And you see the Lakers, again, for the second postseason in a row, play really good basketball. LeBron's looked solid, maybe not at his absolute peak, but is playing good basketball. Anthony Davis is doing everything that you could ask for him. They just don't have it at the end of games. There is just not a five-man roster that Los Angeles can put on the floor that doesn't leave some problem for the Nuggets to go after. Whether it be having an offensive player that can't defend or a defensive player that can't score, you get down to the end of the games, and that Nikola Jokic, Jamal Murray pick and roll is the best player in the league. Nikola Jokic is the best player in the clutch at this point. He just constantly is making good decisions, creating good baskets. He is able to get a good shot no matter what here. So, again, maybe the Lakers put it all on the line here and push as hard as they can to try to get one win and get this thing back to Denver. But I think the Nuggets win. Denver knows the importance of finishing this series quickly so they can get some rest, get guys like Reggie Jackson and Jamal Murray some time to heal. I think the Nuggets win that game. And I might lay the 3.5. I have it closer to 5. But I think the Nuggets definitely win that game.
Yeah, and Reggie Jackson, I think, in a walking boot after game three, which is obviously not great, but also like the eighth man who, like, yeah, he, like, that matters, but it's not like Jamal Murray's hurt or something, or even like one of the other bench players, like Christian Brown's hurt or Peyton Watson's hurt. So, like, it matters, but we'll see. And like you said, they could get a ton of time off. Just about Denver, Noops, the market is essentially pricing them like they have slightly greater than 50% chance to win the Western Conference, depending on where you go, -115, 120, 130. Do you agree with that? And if you do, tell me what the other 45% is. Like, who wins the West in those situations?
Yeah, I think that number might even be a little bit low. Again, assuming Jamal Murray and Jokic stay healthy, we have no reason to believe that's going to change. They've got the best player. They've got the best two-man play. They have the biggest advantage in the entire thing. For me, it comes down to who wins Dallas Clippers. I think the Mavericks win. The Clippers might win. Those two teams at least present some problems for Denver. Both have multiple wings or guards, basically, that will give the Nuggets trouble defensively. So I think that those two teams basically take up a big chunk of the rest of the probability there in the Western Conference. And then maybe just a little bit for Oklahoma City. I don't think the Thunder are going to win. They're very young. Size is a real problem for them. And I just don't know what they do against Jokic, but it's a young team. They have a ton of depth. I really like the way that they responded in game two. So I would have the Nuggets closer to maybe 60% to win the West, give maybe, 30%, 35% of the rest of that to either the Mavericks or the Clippers, really, at this point, with a little bit left for everybody else. I'm probably disrespecting Minnesota at this point, but I just think the Nuggets are definitely going to be in the Western Conference Finals at this point. So I'm looking on the other side of the bracket.
You bet here with Nick and Ken on a Friday. We're talking the NBA playoffs with our pal Noops, Alex Christensen, FTN Bets and Bets US on Twitter @_Noops. Noops, we'll get to some of the games tonight and some of the other series, but the other game that was played last night, do you have anything for us here? It can be short on the Cavs and Magic, but like the least interesting first round series, but maybe we'll have a good betting opportunity game four. Ken and I talked about it in the first hour of the show. I'm definitely betting the under in game four. Orlando wins in blowout fashion, scores 121 points last night against the Cavs, blows them out. Anything for us here on the Magic and the Cavs, and then we'll move on to some of the more interesting stuff.
Yep, Nick, I love that under. I played it in game three. Luckily, also played some Cavaliers team total under as well, so at least split there. But it's just an ugly series. I was excited to see Orlando finally put up some big numbers. Paolo Banchero looks great. The problem is nobody else does. So they got to find some way for somebody else, whether it be Gary Harris, Jalen Suggs, or Franz Wagner, to somehow contribute here. But I think the Magic are going home. I think the Magic are going back to Cleveland tied 2-2 here in a series that I think is going to be long, no matter how little anybody wants to watch it.
fair point. That game, I probably to the surprise of no one, 1 o'clock Eastern. It'd be the first game, just like it was when we started the playoffs last weekend. So, you know, just like get out, run your errands, do whatever you got to do. Get back for, honestly, like the middle of the day is not even that good. Celtics Heat, I do want to ask you about, and we'll do the three games tonight. Just like, what do you think this is going to be? Celtics are 9.5-point road favorites in game three. They're going to be huge favorites in every game the rest of the series. They could lose two more games in a row. They'll probably be an even bigger favorite then in the next game, like 17 points at home, something like that. So like, we know what the market's going to be. Also, we knew what the market was going to be last year, and it didn't matter, and the market kept being the same, and some people would bet the Heat, and some people bet the Celtics, and the people who bet the Heat won. Like, is there anything to take away from last year and how this series has started that makes you want to bet anything the rest of the Celtics Heat series?
I think we were done last year, and again so far in these games, if you're going to bet this series, bet alts for whatever reason, and maybe not for whatever reason. I think just given the three-point variance and the fact that so much of these shots are going to be three-pointers. You've got the Celtics. I think they shot 49 threes in the first game. I can't remember how many in the second. The Heat, again, launching up just a ton of threes. So what you have there, I think, is more variability, and I think that, again, creates more value to play in some of these alts. So you're looking at the Heat here in game three. They're 9.5-point underdogs from our friends at MGM. If you're going to play that, sprinkle a little Heat money line, sell down to like maybe Heat plus 4.5, 5.5, something in that range. I think there is so much, you know, width here basically in the kind of the projections and what could actually happen here, that's kind of the best way to have value. At the end of the day, though, it's kind of a classic series where I never want to lay this many points with the Celtics team in a postseason game, and I'm really just not interested in taking this little points with the Miami Heat team without Jimmy Butler. So it's a series I'm going to be watching a little bit. I don't know if I will be betting it, but I would suggest anyone who does try to find a way to sell some points here.
And Noobs, we'll go lightning round for the games coming up tonight, but just give us like 30 seconds or less tomorrow on Saturday, game three, Thunder Pels. Pels about a 1.5-point, Thunder a 1.5-point road favorite, 208.5 OKC up 2-0 in the series. I like the Thunder. What say you, 30 seconds or less, and then we'll get to tonight.
I like the Thunder, and I like the under as well. I think the kids will be a little bit nervous on the road, but they're still the better team. Like the under better, but also like the Thunder.
We can do the three games. I was going to say tonight, but like we haven't even talked about this yet in the show. 75
An hour, right?
minutes from now. 75 minutes
That's
from now.
Weird. Bucks Why is that, three. By the way?
Do you have standalone all three? Probably the idea.
Friday?
ESPN, ESPN has the rights tonight. Yeah, ESPN has the rights tonight, and they're probably fine having a 5:30 game, whereas Turner would never have a 5:30 game. Would be That's just my guess. Can't wait to see who the announce crew is. Pacers 6.5 in game three, Noops, against Milwaukee. The latest update on, I think Giannis is confirmed out. Chris Middleton's still questionable, and I don't think we have like a final word on what that's going to look like. That's obviously caused the number to drift out. Pacers 6.5, 223. Anything in the game that starts in about an hour?
I like the under there. I think you go back and look at the first couple games. The pace has been fairly slow. The last game, we did see 233 points, but you look at the shooting percentages, really high make rates for both teams. They were both north of 40% from three. I expect the pace to continue to be slow. And if Middleton is out, I'm going to probably add a Bucks team total under as well. There is not much left on that team without Middleton. It's going to be a lot of Dame, which can be good, but Indiana has enough defensive talent and enough, coaching smartness in Rick Carlisle to basically deal with one guy. So if Middleton's out here, I love the under. Give me a Bucks team total under. Even if he plays, I think 223 is at least a couple points too high.
Noobs, 30 seconds for this one. High leverage game three in a high leverage series. Dallas, a 4.5-point home favorite against the Clippers. 212.5 the total.
I lean towards Dallas, lean towards the over, but it's been a very weird series. Neither team shooting well. The pace has been very slow, so I'm going to pass on that game.
Okay, we can do the last game, Timberwolves, Suns. Suns, I mean, this the classic 0-2 spot. So about 30 seconds here. Suns down 0-2. Are we playing first half? Are we playing full game? Or is this actually going to be like a terrible series that the Timberwolves just win easily?
I think I'm going to be on Minnesota here because, like you said, Ken, we're at about an 8-point adjustment from the previous line. At 6 points of that has to be home courts. That means Phoenix gets an extra 2 points just because they're down 0-2. Kevin Durant is having a terrible series. He's minus 20 points and minus 19 points in those first two games. I like Minnesota. I think they continue to beat this Phoenix team who can't seem to find an answer.
Noops, we appreciate it. Love having you on the show, even though you're a Sixers fan. And I think deep down, you know that your guy should have been ejected from the game last night, but that's okay. That's okay. Take the grievance and you know what you can do with it. On Twitter at _noobs, FTN Bets and Bets US. Stay well. Good luck with all the bets. Not good luck to your Sixers, and we'll talk to you soon.
Worst of luck to your Knicks. Best of luck at everything else, gentlemen.
The great Alex, and I appreciate him saying that. I mean that sincerely. The great Alex Christensen joining us here on the show. We were talking during the chat at the end of Noobs' interview, Ken. I think both of us kind of like the Minnesota Timberwolves tonight against Phoenix. I am looking to hit the eject button on my Phoenix stuff.
It just, yeah, just I just don't know what the answers are. I mean, other than just they just shoot way, way, way better, but the shots have been really difficult that they've been getting. So I just don't know what the answer is for them. Play harder, I guess. Yeah.
All right, on the other side, we will get back to last night in the NFL draft. We'll roll through the top 10, win totals that we like, offensive rookie, defensive rookie, all coming up this hour on the show.
We'll be right back with You Better You Bet, presented by BetMGM on the BetQL Network.
With the 8th pick in the 2024 NFL draft, the Atlanta Falcons select Michael
wow.
Penix Jr.
Well, there it is.
Wow.
Washington. Woo.
That is the first surprise
Now.
Of the NFL draft, to say the least.
Welcome back to You Better You Bet, brought to you by BetMGM with Nick Costos and Ken Barkley on the BetQL Network.
Rich Eisen and company with the call last night on the NFL Network after the Falcons take Michael Penix. Michael Penix is probably like, man, I'm not going to be 40 until I start playing games for Atlanta. What a bummer. You act feel bad for the young man, right? Could have gone to the Raiders and played immediately. Now he's got to sit behind Kirk Cousins for what I think will only be 2 seasons max, but still, not the greatest draw for the player, Michael Penix Jr. Dave Wanstead, next hour on the show. Brian Baldinger, next hour on the show. Breaking down the NFL draft. All our bets for tonight in the Power Hour, the final hour of the show. And we'll make sure we get you our bets for the Bucks-Pacers game that's starting at about 5:40 p.m. Eastern time. We will get to that probably sometime, maybe like to start next hour on the show with Milwaukee and Indiana. But we gave our like takes on the team-building part of Atlanta taking Michael Penix. And I'll be consistent throughout this whole process leading up to the season and moving forward, which is if Penix is awesome, no one's going to look back on this and say it was a bad pick for Atlanta. And it's kind of the same way that the Jordan Love situation is going to work out with Green Bay. But it's a sports betting show, right? So let's talk about Atlanta this season, who pass over an opportunity to draft someone on defense, maybe Dallas Turner, Jared Verse, Latu, whomever. Could have drafted Roma Dunze to pair with, you know, Drake London and Kyle Pitts and Bijan Robinson and Kirk Cousins in this new offense. So they draft a guy who's not going to play this year. And they don't want him to play this year. They want Kirk Cousins to play this year. Win total is 9.5, juiced way over. Ken, where are you at right now on the Atlanta Falcons?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think with the other teams that drafted rookie quarterbacks, it's like a volatility conversation, right? Because they're going to play early, even if you don't think McCarthy's going to play from week one. Like, he's probably going to play at some point this year. And so, you know, like, all those teams, Patriots, Commanders, Vikings, you know, just it's maybe Denver, who we'll talk about at some point, too. That's not what this is. So even though it's, like, the most surprising pick, and it's crazy, and he's, like, an older rookie quarterback, and it's, like, all anybody wants to talk about, like, there is some stability to the idea of, like, I mean, you can't think of any more stable quarterbacks than Kirk Cousins, honestly. They're, like, jokes about how, like, well, it's like basically like you want to like make the playoffs and not win, or like, you know, not win primetime games rather. It's like be pretty good. Like, this is your guy. So when we do the win total conversation, like I always just like the coach quarterback tandem and like, does this make sense? So we didn't do it with Daniel Jones in the last segment where it's like, look, like whatever upside you want to apply to Daniel Jones, like Brian Daboll, Daniel Jones 6.5 is either probably right on the money or optimistic. Like, I mean, it's really like, that's kind of what it is. Like, sorry. Like, I just think that's what it is. That's my opinion. I don't think there's an argument that it's crazy different than that. And the interesting thing about the Atlanta pairing is like, okay, like Kirk Cousins, Raheem Morris, like that is a very respectable duo that needs some credit in the market, and you consider also the division that they play in, sure, in addition to that. It's kind of just like, if it's 9.5 way over, like, is that, like, Kirk Cousins, Raheem Morris, like, if, like, for example, there's a very real chance, like, I mean, we're percentage points away probably from somebody choosing to deal a 10 juiced under, right, on the Atlanta Falcons, and if it's, like, Kirk Cousins at this point in his career, Raheem Morris 10, that's, like, it's a little tough to get to, just to be honest. Like, it's just, it's close. It's, this isn't one that I think is crazy off, but if it is off, it's probably a little bit too high, even if, and you can, people are going to argue the division, and I would just remind people, this is what got people into trouble with the Saints last year, and why I had, like, by far the biggest win total position on their under, because it was kind of the same thing. Raheem Morris isn't Dennis Allen, but, like, you get the idea. It's like, Derek Carr, Dennis Allen, 9.5, 10 was the conversation last year, and there were 10s with very reasonable under attached to them, and it's kind of the same. Well, but the schedule's so easy, and when the schedule comes out for this, I'm sure we'll say some of the same stuff. And it's like, I like the coach quarterback thing for that reason. It, like, kind of cuts through whatever schedule games you want to play with the teams. And it's like, no, but, like, what is the real value of this pairing? And to me, like, Kirk Cousins old off a serious injury and Raheem Morris kind of feels like a 9. Like, that's kind of what it feels like to me. So, like, we're not way off here, and it's not like I'm running to bet this in April, but really, really tough to get. And when the schedule starts pulling it away like that, that's when you kind of, like, raise your eyebrows and you go, like, is that really what this is? Or is the schedule really tough to predict and this is a 9-8 team more often?
Yeah, I would only ever bet under right now on the Atlanta Falcons and feel pretty good about it, actually.
Which could still win the division. By the way, favorite to win the division. 9-8 gets you the promised land a whole lot of the time. Yeah.
Maybe by multiple games.
We'll see. I mean, Derek Carr, Dennis Allen pairing, less market respect this year by a healthy margin. Like, won't have to play the under again this year, probably, on them.
I did like their pick of Fuaga. Like, really just needed. I don't think he, like, puts them over the top or makes me want to make a bet or anything, but desperately needed to take an offensive tackle. Ryan Ramczyk may retire. Penning has been a bust thus far. Can't get on the field. So I did like their pick of Fuaga, but, I mean, it's still Derek Allen. And hard to really feel very confident in Derek Allen. So that's the Atlanta Falcons with Kirk Cousins and Michael Penix. Let's pair together the two other rookie quarterbacks selected early in the draft last night. And the connector can be the Holiday Classic on Christmas Eve, which is so funny how these, like, random, meaningless games often turn out to have so much influence as to which quarterbacks end up going where, what the draft order ends up being. Like, the Giants are stuck with Daniel Jones for another year because, like, Tommy frickin' DeVito had to go and, like, win a couple games as the third string quarterback. And fans are so stupid. Oh, how great is this? Tommy DeVito's awesome. Like, we get to do the Italian hand gesture. Okay, great. Now you get Daniel Jones for another year instead of Drake May. Just like, what the hell are you thinking? So Denver and New England played in a terrible game on Christmas Eve that I am happy to say and proud to say I watched, I think, like 0 seconds of. Might be like the only NFL game ever I haven't watched 1 second of. Because on Christmas Eve, wanted to spend time with my family. Both teams, the Broncos with Sean Payton and the Patriots with the new brain trust, including head coach Jerod Mayo, both will have rookie starting quarterbacks this season. Maybe May doesn't start until halfway through the season. I would actually say Jacoby Brissett is the favorite to start in week one for New England, but, like, May's going to play this season for New England. And I think Bo Nix has to be a pretty big favorite to start immediately for the Denver Broncos. The Broncos take Nix at 12. And Ken, I don't know if you knew this, statistical oddity, Bo Nix actually started more games in college than Tom Brady did in the National Football League. So Nix has got the experience here. So New England's win
his
total.
His college career was the length of our show, right? Because the Oregon game against Auburn that started that week one, like the Bo Nix game, that was against Oregon, right? Was that the
Justin
Herbert?
And not only was it against, Justin Herbert was the quarterback for Oregon in that game. Justin Herbert's been in the NFL for like 4 years already.
Bo Nix's college career has been the length of You Better, You Bet. it's really pretty unbelievable. It's really pretty crazy. Sorry, anyway, I think you were about to ask me about the Broncos win total and stuff.
Both win totals are 5.5. Denver's is juiced over. New England's is juiced under. I think Sean Payton probably getting a pretty healthy amount of respect there. Like, I get, like, the win total's 5.5, so that's, like, disrespectful. I guess also the team stinks, but I guess the thought is maybe Can a Sean Payton coach team like ever really be like that bad? And he did get to take the quarterback that he likes, whether he's wrong or not, we'll see. But Payton likes him, and Payton's like a pretty well-renowned like offensive coach. And then Drake May, likely to start, I would say, Ken, the majority of games for the Patriots this season. But I think Brissett will start in week one. So Patriots and Broncos with their rookie quarterbacks, betting out looks for them as it stands now.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you on Brissett for week one for the Patriots, too. I think just even again, if we just play the, like, I don't know game with just like, yeah, Bo Nix, Drake May, like somebody's going to be good. Maybe one of them's, maybe they're both bad. We just don't know. The one advantage that Denver has, I mean, you can say like, well, I guess Peyton is an advantage because he's like a known quantity of being a Super Bowl winning head coach, and Jerod Mayo isn't yet. And so that would be one advantage where it's like, who's more likely to go over their win total or have a good season? I will say, like, the other thing that Denver has going for them is like their schedule breaks easier than the Patriots does by like a pretty good amount in terms of the unique games that neither of them share. Denver draws the NFC South as their NFC division this year. Like, there are some advantages. The bonus game is Seattle. Like, there are lots of, you know, there's like a way that Denver doesn't even have to play great to get to a 500 kind of a season. So I would just say, like, on average, I would like, I agree that there should be juiced over and the Patriots should be juiced under because it doesn't seem like the Patriots get a lot of breaks. I mean, for a team that lost a ton of games last year, the Patriots, their unique games, like, in their division, so they draw NFC West, AFC South, which is what their whole division draws, but, like, their unique games are Bengals, Chargers, Bears, which is, like, pretty rough for a team that won, like, zero games last year. It's not a break, and their division's tougher than the AFC West. Like, the Broncos get to play the Raiders twice, you know, which might be pretty awesome. We'll see how that goes. The Broncos get to play the Chargers twice, who might just be above average or average, even if Justin Herbert's really awesome. So just, like, win total conversation. Look, I think you have a rosier outlook this year on Denver just because of the breaks that they get. But, like, you know, do both teams have upside? Yeah, because, like, everything I just said doesn't matter if Drake May's good. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't, I mean, just, and, like, just to remind people how everyone felt last year, like, no one thought Stroud was going to do that, and Houston was rated like garbage. Like, we were, the exact same conversation we just had about these two teams we did with Houston on this date last year, probably. You just never know. And if the quarterback's good, and yeah, there's a lot of coaching and other stuff that goes into it. Quarterback's good. Like, you can overcome all this stuff. So even if I'm saying all that about Denver, like, I get why they're at least juiced over and the Patriots are juiced under. That's probably schedule driven, too. You can make a case for any of these teams, and it's the simplest case to make. And it's just like, if the guy's good, it doesn't. None of this other stuff matters. And you use Stroud last year as the reason for that. And you use Bryce Young as the reason for, if he's bad, look how bad it can be.
The difference I would paint between these teams, with acknowledging that if Drake May's awesome, then, like, New England will be better than Denver, unless, like, Bo Nix is awesome too. Denver, just like skill position players on offense, unless you think Ramondre Stevenson is going to come back and be like Emmitt Smith for New England, Denver's got like six guys that are better than anyone on New England. Like, New England's number one receiver right now is Kendrick Bourne. Like, Denver's got three guys that are better than Kendrick Bourne. Just like, it's a brutal setup right now, and we still have six rounds of the draft to go. We'll see what New England's able to swing. You know, there were rumors yesterday on Thursday that they were trying to trade for Brandon Ayuk, so maybe they've got to move up their sleeve, but as of right now, like, that's a rough situation for a quarterback to walk into, even if Drake May is going to be great. As of right now, not a lot to work with. We can kind of see how things go as we move along the rest of the NFL draft and the rest of the offseason. Nick and Ken here, You Better You Bet on a Friday betting breakdown from last night's NFL draft. I asked you this off air earlier, and I love kind of how you distill things down into just as like even an elementary way of thinking about win totals, coach quarterback pairings. So I tell you, Jim Harbaugh, coach, Justin Herbert, quarterback, probably like, oh, that sounds pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Win total 8.5. Like, juiced to the over, but like, not really that much. I know that you have to lay a pretty hefty price if you want to bet over Chargers to go above 500. Draft Joe Alt last night on the offensive line. Get some great Jim Harbaugh football guy quotes. And the aftermath is the tip of the spear. Just classic Harbaugh stuff that you have to really like, even if you don't like Jim Harbaugh. I kind of think people are going to be down on the Chargers. And I'm trying to decide, like, do I want to buy on this team at any point now, in between now and week one?
I don't blame you for wanting to buy. Like, Justin Herbert's the quarterback. Seems like this is a quarterback that everyone's wanted to buy every season since he's basically been in the league. I mean, it's just the jokes about the Chargers like during the summer, every summer, it's like every year, like 9, 9.5, 10 win total. Every year, like this is the year. Herbert MVP, always a really popular bet. And like underperform. You're cashing unders, you're cashing, you know, like not make the playoffs, like obviously with one exception. And you could have just bet against them in the playoff game. And they had an epic failure. So just it's like, it's been a bad run. And it's funny, like, okay, bad run, and they upgrade to the coach that just won the national championship, coach has been to a Super Bowl before, and you're right, like, the response in the betting market is like, but they were so bad last year, and that's like, that's sort of like tethering to this win total. To be fair, the 8.5s are juiced over, and they're juiced pretty big over. I mean, not like minus 200, but like, there is, it is more over than under on 8.5, so it's kind of like, 9-8 is kind of maybe like your projected record in the market for the Chargers. Like, do you agree or disagree with that? If there is another thing the Chargers have going for them. So first of all, I totally agree on this is one of the coach quarterbacks that you get to and you go like, really? really on this one? Really? It's 8.5? Really? I don't know. And you got Denver and Vegas in the division. And then, like, this is what we did with the Patriots too. Chargers draw pretty easy. Like, they do. I mentioned Broncos and Chargers are in the same division. They both draw the NFC South. And obviously, like, the Patriots don't draw them, and other teams not in the division don't draw the NFC South. Chargers' unique games are Tennessee, New England, Arizona. They don't even have to be that good. That's 3-0. I mean, like, and it could also be 0-3. Like, it doesn't have to be wins. But look, like, would you rather Tennessee, New England, Arizona, or Kansas City, Buffalo, San Francisco? I mean, come on. You know, like, there's a difference here. So, again, like, there's a way it can break, just like with Denver. Like, do they even have to be that good to go over a number like this? Great, they'll go 0-2 to the Chiefs. What about the other 15? And the other 15 look pretty good.
Like, will they go 0-2 against? I know what you're saying. Like, I don't even know if that's going to happen.
I'm just saying you can concede the points. You can concede the argument definitely on the Chiefs games, yeah, and you still have all your work ahead of you in proving that over 8.5 is a bad idea.
I just want to, in case we don't get the chance to get this in, you know, the Chiefs and Bills made a trade at the end of the first round last night. Yeah. The Chiefs selecting, like, Xavier Worthy. Is there any question that when they play this year, like, Xavier Worthy has, like, 3, 145, and 2 against the Bills? Like, is there any doubt that that happens? On the other side, he's even going to wear goggles during the games. I want to run Offensive Rookie of the Year by my guy, Ken Barkley, and you, our audience.
We'll be right back with You Better You Bet, presented by BetMGM on the BetQL Network.
With the fourth pick in the 2024 NFL Draft, the Arizona Cardinals select Marvin Harrison Jr., wide receiver, Ohio State.
Welcome back to You Better You Bet, brought to you by BetMGM with Nick Costos and Ken Barkley on the BetQL Network.
Kyler Murray gets his number one receiver last night. Marvin Harrison from Ohio State. It's a pretty chalky first round, to the top 10 at least, of the NFL draft until Michael Penix went 8th overall. That was pretty unexpected.
Yeah, top six, because like, Latham was the favorite to be the second lineman taken. I don't know if people thought he would go like 7 if Alt went 5, but like, even Latham 7, it's like, yeah, okay. Like, he was a huge favorite to be the second lineman taken. He was the favorite to be the 5th overall pick. So that was like not surprising. But then it's literally like totally expected. And it's like 7, great, no problem. Then it's just like everything for an hour after that. What? Like, well, I don't understand. Like, even the stuff that you expected, you're so mind blown by what happened before it. You're like, are people going to start trading up to take defensive players? Like, what the hell's going to happen here? And yeah, just kind of bizarre stuff.
We'll talk to Dave Wanstead and Brian Baldinger about all of that coming up next hour on the show as we continue to break down round one of the 2024 NFL Draft. We're just waiting for official word on Milwaukee Bucks forward Chris Middleton, and once we know for sure that Chris Middleton's going to play or not play, we think he's going to play based on comments Doc Rivers made within the last, like, 90 minutes. But once we know for sure, we will bring you our bets for tonight's Bucks-Pacers game, and for people watching the show live, consuming it live, we're 45 minutes away from tip-off of that game. I actually think it's 5:40. Eastern is the tip time.
Yeah, it's probably just after 5:30. Probably do a quick pregame show, probably like ESPN. I think ESPN's got all three, so they'll give you like, we'll go to the studio for 10 minutes and kind of do whatever, talk about the games. Usually ESPN, they get that. It's actually annoying, especially if you're like, it's not DVR anymore, but just watching the game on delay. Because you'll be like, all right, like, let's get it started. And then the clock at the top is like, countdown to the game, 18:30. And you're just like,
yeah, it's
come on. Like, can we just like, or like, can YouTube TV clip this differently or something? Can I, do I, does it have to be this? Like, I just, like, you're not fooling me. I know you're about to shove a bunch of commercials in my face and I'm not interested. So it's just like, can we get past that? So yeah, I guess we're going to get that in 45 minutes.
I think I have a just off of what you said, non-NFL related, a contrarian sure. opinion on something that's happened this postseason. I don't think ESPN has ever done this before. I could be wrong. So with right. the hockey games that they're broadcasting, the Stanley Cup playoff games.
Oh, it's the best. Countdown to second period starting? Is that what you're
doing? It actually, I think I don't like it because it makes me sad when it's like 18 minutes away. And I get mad that it's so far away.
Oh,
I actually think I don't like it for that reason. Like, I don't want to know like how
you
long
be
the intermission is. Yes,
yeah, you
want to
be like, I'll just pretend it's 8 minutes. And then like, oh, another commercial break.
Because when it says 18, I'm like, no way. Really? 18 minutes? Really?
How am I going to make it? Right? It's like, actually, it's the same as it's always been. Actually, that's what it is. I just like that because there's so many games going on. When you hit intermission and it's like 18 minutes, I look at my clock, I look at my phone and I go, like, let's say it's like 8:20. I go, cool, 8:38. I got to flip back over to the, set a timer on your phone, whatever. And you know when you have to flip back over. And you could do that if you knew how long the stuff was anyway. They make it really easy. I love ESPN. The Raps, which is like the halftime pre-post game shows for that's just what it's called in the industry. Like the hockey coverage. Like I'm in. Like I know they've got to get kind of like off remarks sometimes by Mark Messier and Subban and stuff. Like
Levy
I'm in on
the is
whole
awesome.
Thing. Yeah.
And Messier is awesome
thing.
And Subban. They're great together. I agree.
Like the content's good. You referenced that call that they played the other day. You want to tell that story real quick? Did you do that on the air or was that off the air?
I don't think so. So they played because it was 31 years to the date that the Buffalo Sabres swept the Boston Bruins in the first round. Pat LaFontaine scores a goal in overtime in game 4. And Rick Jenneret, who's like legendary NHL play-by-play guy, the radio voice of the Sabres forever, the call, like he does the call like the Sabres win. And then he says Mayday like 9 times in a row as the Sabres are celebrating on the ice. And Ryan Callahan, who was doing the next game, like the Stars-Knights game, Levy brings him in and Callahan is from Western New York. And he asks him, and he's like, oh, I remember this. It was so great. It was just like really good. And I would
like,
say...
A-plus producing, you know, by the way. That's like A-plus
It's really
plus,
terrific.
Plus producing. Yeah.
And the call's great. He just goes, Mayday! 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 It just does it. Like, it's and like the fever builds a little bit. It's spectacular. And whereas, you know, Turner's NBA coverage, I think everyone can agree, like slams ESPN's.
Right, it's the personalities.
Both networks, I think, do a really nice job with the NHL. Like, I think all of it's really good.
Oh, I totally agree. Yeah. I mean, it's funny because like I'm just gonna want to talk about this it's almost not ESPN's halftime show's fault, like it's just not it's like Goodwill Hunting, like well because they're the point to be fair the point of every halftime show is to shove advertising in your face. That's the point of the halftime show. It's not to do a good halftime show. The point is to like get inventory in. And the problem is like ESPN's strategy, and this has been well documented, this is not like me guessing, like their minutes in commercials per like break and per halftime show like are much, much, much more than any other halftime show of any sport, I think, even football, whatever, college football. It's like 30 seconds, 5 minutes of ads, a minute, 5 minutes of ads, like a paid promotion, and then another break with no talking even in between. Like, it's like, what kind of structure is this? And so the idea that you're going to have like Stephen A and Perk and Bob Myers or Wilbon or somebody else, and like anyone's going to get to do even, forget say anything of substance, have any fun. Like how, it within that structure, how are you supposed to do that? And you have Stephen A, who's like a big personality who needs to be given the opportunity to talk every time, rightfully so. So now, like, now look how behind the eight ball you are. It's impossible. It's actually like a format that's impossible to succeed in. And then like Turner, it's a conventional halftime format with just a little bit fewer commercials. And the funny parts occur organically. Like the production staff there, I'm sure, is like top notch and like they've been there forever and they're really good. But like, you don't need to tell Barkley to have the broom for the Lakers game after the show where he's like pushing it in the pro, like that, like great. Like I'm sure somebody had to get the broom and the producers need to encourage that behavior. But like, you know, like it's just part of it. They're just really good at coming up with stuff like that. So they're just sort of in a position to succeed more than the ESPN crew. Even if you're like, well, no, Barkley's just way better. Well, that's true. But like, he has an opportunity to be good because of like how the show is structured and how the breaks work and stuff. It's no different than our show. Like, this segment can only be 12 minutes. Like, no matter how good we are or bad or whatever, like, we are within the confines of this. It's no different for those guys working in that structure.
Nick and Ken here on You Better You Bet on a Friday. Love that we're able to have conversations like this because there's so many games going on. Give me an impromptu ranking. Top five sports months of the year.
Oh, this wasn't where I thought you were going to go.
And the question is basically, like, where does April
Where's
rank?
April? So April, so you make the pro April case first before we do the ranking, right? So April, you get the best of kind of the start of the month, national championship game in college basketball, sometimes the Final Four and national championship game and the Masters. And then you get all the playoffs, which is what you're talking about, and you get the NFL draft.
Pretty good. It's pretty good.
I think the thing that really pushes April for me is, like, you and I both live in pretty cold weather climates. People that live, like, in the South or the, you know, whatever, a lot of places in the country or the world or whatever, like, the climate's not the same. This is exactly the month when there start to be days when, like, you can be outside a lot during the day, and it's not a chore, and it's not, like, painful. And, you know, I was typing in the chat, like, my wife and kids are, like, out in the backyard. Like, my wife's, like, drinking a High Noon. The kids are playing on the playground. Like, friends are over. Like, it's, like, that you can have days like that in April. You can finally do that. So the idea of, like, that during the day and playoff games at night is just like a vibe. Like, it's the best. It's so much better than the other months because of that weather. People say, like, football Saturday and college football during the fall, you have that same vibe of, like, the weather's changing and there's college football on. But, like, I think I would still go October just for a couple reasons. Like, the NFL is a part of it.
I agree.
The NFL is a part of the month in a bigger way than the draft. College football is a part of the month, and it's not a part of April at all. And I don't watch baseball the whole regular season, but I love the playoffs. And just like hockey, same thing. I don't watch the regular season very closely. Watched every Stanley Cup playoff game almost start to finish so far. Even, you know, like Nashville, Vancouver, who nobody even wants to watch anymore because it's Demko's hurt. Still watching that. So, but April, could April be second? Is that like the argument that we're going to make here? Think April could be second?
I don't know if April, because so I'm a bad person to answer this question because I love football so much.
So you're going to pick like November.
So I almost think that it's like November, December, like January sucks because our schedule sucks. So I think that kind of like pollutes it for me a little bit.
I agree. And February's
underrated. March is awesome.
March,
you get the tournament.
You get the tournament, but to me, like, you get the tournament and you get nothing else. And the regular
February,
because the Super Bowl and the tournament is like a push, even though the tournament has more days of games, and the regular seasons for the sports in February are March NBA, March hockey, no way on that stuff. Like, toward the end of the month, especially start of the month, good out of the All-Star break, you get to like March 20th, 21st, 22nd, like March NBA is right. Why do you think everybody loves the playoffs so much? Like, wow, these games are so awesome. Yes, that's because everyone cares again and is trying, and that's not what March is like. At least in February, you get some of that. And like Super Bowl and NCAA tournament, both like signature cornerstone events.
April 2nd for you?
I'm trying to think of like if I can make a big argument. So it would be, if it wasn't April, it would have to be like one of the months adjacent to October, right? It would have to be like November would have to be second, right? You get the World Series, which some years, like, I actually don't really care that much about, I guess. And then you get like hockey, NBA are both really new. So that's cool. Like, regular,
it's fun.
Like, when NBA started, you and Tyler and I would have this chat where it's like, oh man, like, League Pass on YouTube TV this year with the four screen. Every night I'm watching like every NBA game and loving it, as opposed to like, oh, I guess I'll watch this tonight. So I don't know, man. April might have that though. Just the every night, like every night, the feeling that it's like the biggest game as opposed to 50 games. I think I'll take the biggest game over 50 games, I think, a lot of nights. So yeah, well, I'll actually say second for right now.
Yeah, it was great. And you get the NFL draft also, which is just with a billion really playoff
fun.
Games and the first rounds are the best just because there's so many games. It's really great. And we got a ton of first-round games coming up this weekend and tonight in the world of sports. We'll give you bets as we move along for not just the games tonight, but for the games that we know about this weekend. And I got a couple angles for games that I a couple angles that I like for games on Saturday and Sunday. I got a couple hockey bets that I really like for tonight. God help me. I think the Avs are too big of a favorite tonight against the Jets.
I thought you were going to say you like Vancouver. I think Nashville like definitely wins tonight.
Well, do you want to bet the under in the game?
I want to bet like the under on how many games Vancouver's going to win the rest of the series. That's about
it. We'll talk about it in a little bit. But to start next hour, we'll welcome Coach Dave Wanstead to the show to recap the NFL draft.
We'll be right back with You Better You Bet, presented by BetMGM on the BetQL Network.